Good evening and welcome everyone. My name is Rachel Jarvis and I'm the director of the Mosaic Cruise, and I'm really pleased to welcome you all here tonight. It's our honour and our privilege to host the wonderful Mohammed Melihi here with us tonight, and also joining him in conversation is the curator of this fascinating exhibition, which is the last in a series of modernist exhibitions we've been collaborating on, Moore and Montezami. So I know we're all eager to hear them both talk, so I'm going to pass you straight over, but if you'd like to join me in giving them a very warm welcome.
Hello everyone, good evening. Very happy to see all of your faces and smiles. We're truly delighted to welcome Mohammed Melihi, not only as a renowned international artist from Morocco who is fairly considered a landmark and a pioneer for post-colonial arts in Morocco, and then how this expanded through his different practices worldwide. The conversation tonight, of course, before that, I would like to thank the whole Mosaic Rooms team, Omar Katan, Rachel Jervis, and all the Mosaic Rooms team who have been so helpful and instrumental in putting this exhibition together. It's also the end of Ramadan, right? And it was Eid yesterday or today, depending. So we should also have a thought and celebrate with all our Muslim friends worldwide. And I was saying again that we're really lucky to have Mohammed Melihi with us. It's his first solo show in the UK. We will mainly focus the conversation around his trajectory between the 60s and the beginning of the 80s. Mr. Melihi has done so much, have been to so many places and worked through so many platforms between the 60s up until today that it's almost impossible to cover everything within 45 to 50 minutes. But we will still try to have a comprehensive sort of trajectory over all these different issues. I'm just checking if your microphone is working, I think. Yeah, normally it should work. So we could begin this conversation, Mr. Melihi, and again, thank you so much for being with us. We will look at some images, archival images, which will help to progress on that trajectory of yours and our conversation. And given the first photo that we have behind us, that's actually one of the pictures included in the exhibition in the next room over there. I know since the beginning of this exhibition, a lot of people ask you, are you really playing the drums? Are you really a drummer?
Yeah,
and this image here, we actually see you in front of one of your work from that period. And it's in Rome,
yes,
related to an exhibition in Galleria Trastevere. Even if the photo is not in Galleria Trastevere, it was in your studio in Rome, but it was published in the leaflet of one of your exhibitions in Rome. So before we talk about the drums, can you tell us a little bit about the time when you arrived in Rome and how you connected with the art scene from Rome? I believe Signora Topazia Aliata, who was the founder of the Galleria Trastevere, was a key encounter for you in Rome. But I'm just curious for you to tell us, how did you see Italy, Italian artists, and Italian modernism at that time when you were producing fairly minimalistic and clear-cut, often white, black and white paintings?
Thank you very much. And many thanks to the audience. Well, it's easy to answer your question, but it could be very long and very hard.
I'm sure.
No. Since my learning about art, I was very ambitious to know and discover things. So when I went to Rome, before Italy, I spent 2 years in Spain. So I started getting acquainted with these two cultures, Latin culture, strongly important. Painting in Spain is very important, Italy too. But since I come from Morocco, a zone that has been under Spanish ruling, so there used to be a fine art school where I started in 1953, following courses on art. But Spain didn't... I wasn't happy in Spain because that was a period of fascism, the Franco system, and since I come from a place that was ruled by Spain, so we used to protest and claim for independence. So anyway, I had very good professors, very academic in Spain. Then I had to. I went to Italy. Italy is, as everybody knows, is one of the last World War II in the world. Benefited from international movements in art, in music, and everything. And it was really an open country that has lost to war attention. Italy was among the losers, so it became more open than other European countries, like France, for instance. The French were very sad of having lost the war. Well, this is my own interpretation. Anyway, Italy used to drain a lot of movements, a lot of people, and don't forget that those years, 57, 60, were the most important years in Italy, in Italian culture, where the cinema industry, movie making was very important, with Fellini, Antonioni, Visconti. So they took a peak of the place. Then, a lot of artistic movement. For instance, it's in Italy, in Rome, in the first year I have seen the Jackson Pollock show.
In Rome, Galleria Nazionale d'Arte Moderna.
And there used to be a gallery called Rome New York Art Foundation, created by an American lady by the name of Frances McCann, whom I met before Topazia Aliata, and they had the galleries next to each other. And okay. Francis started to be interested in my work, and she introduced me to three or four galleries with letters asking them to look to my work and to support my work. Now, Frances McCann was a lady that knew Morocco, and she happened to know a very important artist in our history, is Mouly Ahmed Idrissi, whom you used to know, Peggy Guggenheim. Now, in this point, if you allow me to give a glance on the Moroccan art, because Morocco, maybe most of the people don't know. Well, they know Morocco by name, but they don't know what is Morocco really. So, we were under sort of colonial administration, so the French part has created a school in art late in the 50s, and another one. So in that period, speaking of art and artists and modern artists, it was very difficult. I can mention only four artists, like Hassan Glaoui, Mouly Ahmed Idrissi, and Maryam Amzian and Mohamed Serkini, but no more than these artists, you see. So other artists were really mentored by different persons, like Paul Bowles, the American writer, and Brian Gysin, and also Peggy Guggenheim. I have to mention these people because the start of Moroccan painting has started quite early, but from scratch. There were no tendencies, no schools, no ideology in art.
Yeah.
So this is, when I went to Rome, what is important, I found that the field is very rich and broad, and I start being interested in different cultures. There was a big exhibition of the Zen art at the Galleria Nazionale.
In Rome,
okay. In Rome. But Frances McCann was the lady who one day she told me, Mohammed, take this, and she gave me a book, a little book, black. And I didn't know why she gave me this little book. And the book was written by a German scholar. He went to Japan in the 30s to learn the art of archery. So that was the first book, you know, I had to read.
Le archery, like le tir à l'arc.
Le tir à l'arc. Many times my Italian language was not really done, so I have been influenced by this book.
Was it a book about the Zen philosophy?
The Zen philosophy. Then I read another book about Zen Buddhism, Zen by Alan Watts. Those were my readings. At the same time, I have watched a Japanese film, very important, by the title Rashomon by Kurosawa. So these images of the, maybe I am getting out of the track, but these things were very important to me.
And
to know the Zen, to read about the Zen, and through this type of philosophy, and then reminds me of Islamic Sufism. So I found myself in the position to recover my identity. So I went to the West to learn Western trends. At the same time, I fall on Oriental trends, like Zen philosophy. It's very important. So I changed my painting. When I saw Jackson Pollock with action painting, my paintings were by dripping and a lot of big brush strokes. Through the Zen philosophy, I became more and accompanied by jazz music.
So that brings us back to the drums, jazz. Of course.
So I was really interested to become a drum player.
And sorry, Mr. Melehi, is there any way we can relate your interest for Zen philosophy and your readings of the time with the fact that in Italy the color had not entered your painting yet, and you were painting mainly in black and white, as we can see in the first room of this exhibition, and, you know, before color and all of these colors would come in your work a bit later. Yes. Is there any relation between the Zen and this kind of work in Italy?
Yes, because in Zen philosophy you have to take an opposition to everything you may have learned anew. You clean your mind, you clean your conceptual world.
It's like a reduction to the fundamental
and
elements.
Then I started painting by vertical lines, eliminating color, working by black on black and gray, you know, hardly. Right. That was, it was to me at that period to paint in black with very minimalistic elements was like a prayer. You know,
right.
So I had to materialize my Zen thinking. Anyway, don't worry, because to learn about Zen, it's quite easy and very difficult at the same time. And it's something that it's very hard to explain and to transmit to other person.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Melehi. There's a point that I would like to make here by adding this image, because we know that your relation to Rome on the one side, on the left side, and to New York or to the US, on the right-hand image, you are working on a fresco project in the cafeteria of the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and we know that you got a grant, the Rockefeller artistic grant, to study at the Minneapolis Art Institute.
Correction.
Sorry.
Sorry. No, I went to Minneapolis as an immigrant and a lost person, you know. And I went there just to study, not to paint. I want to study architecture. But I happen to know people like Mr. Friedman at the Walker Art Center, mm-hmm. who asked me, "What are you doing? Why you came to America?" I said, "I came to learn about American art and study architecture, and I would like to find a school where I can, you know, study." And so he sent me to the Minneapolis School of Art, whom the president was a priest. So I went to him, and he said, "Well, I explained who I am and the exhibitions I had in Rome." And he looked at me very fixed. He said, "I need you," like this. Then I discovered at the same school Parviz Tanavoli,
the Iranian artist.
Anyway, in one dinner, he gave me the chance to change my visa to stay in the United States longer and take care of a classroom to teach as assistant teacher in painting in 1962. And one day the president of the school, he gave a dinner and he invited, as I say, Parviz Tanavoli, and you, "I need you because you come from another world. And I like you to be here to teach our youth because they know nothing about the world. So I need you to have them discover your culture and your talent." That's why I was hired. But then I was just a special student and assistant teacher.
Which was already incredible, yes, for someone of your age from, yes, Morocco to become an assistant teacher in the Minneapolis Art Institute.
After 2 months working, he just asked me to be a principal teacher in painting in the Minneapolis School of Art. But you know, Minneapolis is a place where almost 4 to 4 months of snow. It goes below 20 degrees or 25 degrees.
Yeah.
Well, the end of the course, I went to New York, to visit New York, because my goal was to go to see New York. Then I applied for the Rockefeller Foundation for a fellowship, so they gave me I gave up the job in Minneapolis.
Oh, I see. So the Rockefeller was after Minneapolis, of course. Can I just ask you something quick here? I mean, the point that I was trying to make with this slide here between Rome and America is that on the one hand, you are playing the drums and it feels as if the painting has something more than the picture itself, as if, you know, the drums are music, and we also know the importance of music and pulsation in Moroccan tradition and history. There's something that goes out of the picture, something that becomes sound, or something, even when we look at your painting, just visually, you know, that feel or sound like music, pulsation, rhythm. So that's one thing. And then in the Minneapolis Art Institute, you're already working on a fresco project. You're not just painting, you're literally going to the cafeteria and try to create environmental painting. So I'm just curious, because these are early examples of how the picture goes out of itself, either through the sound or through a more environmental view of painting.
Yes, thank you very much. It was a period like if having under an extase of movement, so music and painting came together at the same time, and it was like a fight to find a way, you know. It's through painting, through music, through curiosity to learn about everything.
But I mean, people from the cafeteria, how did they respond when you said, "I want to create this environment of painting in the cafeteria"?
No, they were pleased with the atmosphere, you know. It was spontaneous. They never expect to have the cafeteria where work of art is in the cafeteria. It was for me a start to integrate art in usual places, not the painting, but to apply art in the building.
Non-museum spaces, let's say.
No, well.
Or outside of the museum, let's say.
well, outside, and you will see what will come after.
Exactly, exactly. I wanted to show a view, a very nice view of your artist studio in New York, in Bowery, a view from 1963. And what's interesting with this photo of your studio in New York is maybe the fact that, okay, we're looking at your studio, we're not looking at New York City, and we know the importance of the urban environment and city landscape for you. What I like in this photo is that New York is reflected through your paintings, because again, these little squares that we have in this work, the work behind there, where we know that the small squares play like metaphors of New York skyscrapers, et les gratte-ciels in New York. So eventually, even without going outside, we get a feel of the city and a feel of the urban landscape through your paintings. Can you tell us a little bit the encounter with New York City as a vibrant...
Well, it's an encounter with everything, because painting, the music, and doing thinking art, it's like producing poetry. Now, this, the New York painting that carry a lot of that, I was impressed by Manhattan at night. Everything becomes dark, but all the windows, the lighted windows in the skyscrapers are impressive. Then, from then, I went to cybernetics. Why? Because when I was in Rome, we had a classroom in the academy called Black and White.
Bianco e Nero.
Bianco e Nero, run by a professor. And, you know, I was, 19, 20 years old. Our professor, instead of teaching us how to draw, all the conversation and the talks were about cybernetics. So the thing is how to make the relation between the science of the cybernetical science to the actual, to the plastic shape and form, with the mixture of the Zen interest that, you know, I had really a... In French, you say ratatouille. It's a meal that you put all types of vegetables together.
A melting pot of theories.
Yes, theories. In other words, I was under a thrust of ideas. I think, and don't forget, I've never lost the idea that I am a Moroccan, I am a Muslim, I am an Arab, I am half Arab or half Berber anyway. So all these elements keep working in your mind constantly, you see. And it's a fight, where to stand, what, how to behave, what to do. So New York was to me, knowing what the story of Mondrian and all the artists.
And you were exhibiting...
I still keep a sense of love with this city. Like my friend Bruce, he doesn't bear anymore. He's around us.
Bruce is over there.
But it's a hectic city. But anyway, it's a lovely place to be, especially in the 60s.
And you were also included in an exhibition called The Formalist in the Washington Gallery, alongside works from Piet Mondrian.
Yes.
In the beginning.
Well, I'm proud because in the alphabetical name, my name comes before Mondrian. So Mohamed Meleha and then Piet Mondrian.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll jump on the cybernetics very quickly. Because you have a painting, entitled IBM.
Yes.
This painting can be seen here.
Yes.
It's the painting with the squares.
The reddish one,
yes. So let me just remind that the IBM painting from Mr. Melehi was included in a 1962 exhibition at the MoMA in New York, which was called Hard Edge and Geometric Painting, 1962. And it's that same work here in IBM that you can see here in 1966 in the first acknowledged exhibition of the three artist known later as the Casablanca Art School artist were Farid Belkahia, Mohamed Millehi, and Mohamed Shiba. And so even though we don't have a view tonight of the 1962 MoMA exhibition, we can still have a look at this painting, which is now in the Doha Mathaf collection in Qatar. Can you just let us know, you know, a little bit about this IBM painting? How did you came out with this idea of entitling your work IBM?
Yes, well, I was really impressed by it. Now, most of the people don't remember how it was to deal with the computer. I'm talking about the perforated cards. If you take an older perforated card, that carries a lot of information and notions. That I was impressed with that. If you put that card upside down, it looks like a New York building in a way. Just to simplify. So when I learned that through the IBM, the industrial brain, this, you know, struck my mind. You see, Zen, music, industrial brain, your human brain, you mix all this, you know, you fell in a sort of a mosaic, the labyrinth, and how to get rid of this pressure. So I start painting like IBM. This was the first painting done in New York, titled IBM. I have IBM song. All titles of my paintings had to do with cybernetics. Human and cybernetic, IBM song, moon landing, for instance. All this type of painting was related to see the cybernetics.
There's also something that...
And the thing is, if, I don't know if you are, if you love the movies, please watch this Japanese film of Kurosawa, Rashomon. And the problem of the cybernetic was really exposed in this picture, in the traditional Japan. You know, it's very, very important. And
can I ask a question?
If you allow me to say, because this Kurosawa, Kurosawa is really a communist, a Japanese communist filmmaker who made really the Capolavori.
His masterpiece.
Masterpiece in movie. It's very sorry.
No, just one question, Mr. Millehi, because what's also intriguing to me is that for this 1966 Rabat exhibition, first acknowledgement of the trio Belkahia, Shiba, and Millehi, your work is like super cybernetical, super geometric, super radical in its kind of, hard edge or whatever. But the poster that you designed for this exhibition, which is a poster now part of the MoMA collection,
yes,
is using more post-calligraphic and more Arabic scriptures. So there's a kind of contrast between the work that you were showing there and the graphic design work that's using Arabic and sort of, you know, you could say post-calligraphic.
Yeah, but if you look to this poster, you might get some Chinese and Japanese notions in visual art.
Right.
That's there. But to bring this element far Asia to Morocco is something. And the circle.
Very interesting.
And combining the Arabic lettering to the Latin lettering, you know? And that's why at the MoMA, they in 1967, I think, or 68.
When they acquired
was chosen. No,
I was chosen.
I didn't know how they got to it.
Okay, it was chosen as a poster.
Among the posters of the year, that year, I don't remember.
Year.
It's in their collection.
And it's how it gets in the MoMA collection. That's fascinating what you're saying about this sort of back and forth between Muslim but also Far East influence. Now we definitely have to look a little to your coming back to Morocco and when you become you know, this very important professor at the Casablanca Art School. We have very nice images here of you in your very elegant suit next to a group of students here. And we have another photo a little lower here where you're actually sitting on this chair in the middle of everybody. There's also Farid Belkaria and Mohamed Sheba behind you. I would like to show three images of your experience as a professor so we can explain to our audience what, you know, what innovation and what transformation you brought to that school. Because obviously, you have to be careful. When we speak about the Casablanca Art School in the context of this exhibition and Mr. Melehi's intervention in that school, we're talking about a brief time. Mr. Melehi arrived in the school in 1964 and left the school in 1969. But within those 5 years, the amount of innovations, of radical transformation, was really stunning. So, first picture, a view of your studio, where it's a very rare image, I have to say. It's not even included in the exhibition. It will be included in the book that we are preparing with Zaman Books and the Mosaic Rooms on the Casablanca Art School. So this is a view of your students' work, and it's quite surprising or not, some of the works look like your work, right? The waves are there, and yes, I think also you introduced collage. Collage and photography. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about
it? Well, collage and anyway, in my coming to Morocco was really like an earthquake in terms of concept of art. And I had the chance to make it in Casablanca. I would like to point to another point which is very important. When I had the Rockefeller Foundation Fellowship, I had to sign the paper, you know, as terms of the conditions to have the Rockefeller Foundation Fellowship is once the training is finished, you go back to your country, make your country benefit from your learning and teaching. So instead of staying in America, where I had been shown, exhibited at the MoMA or in Washington Gallery, and I was already produced in a very important gallery in New York, an artist among its artists. All that I dropped it, you know, in the side, and I went back to Morocco to accomplish my the agreement with the Rockefeller Foundation and start teaching, making new people learn. But my teaching went beyond the students, reached even my colleague professors. That it's a bit pretentious from my side to say it, but it did happen. Because my coming to Morocco has capovolto, I did make upside down the concept of art and the practice of art. And also, there was a work that we have done collectively is to bring painting to modern thinking, to socio-political thinking with writers, philosophers, engineers, and so on. And you might have seen the two magazines here, Souf behind me, which was a very determinant element to bring together the back diaspora, because Morocco was independent in 1956. So from 1956 to 1960, thousands of young Moroccans went to learn to study abroad while we could not do it during the protectorate. So the coming back of the wave, those who went to learn and formed themselves in Europe, in America and other countries,
sure,
came back. So it was like a very propitious moment to gather between artists, poets, engineers, and that's thanks to a man, Talatif Labi, who started to create this magazine, and I was really interested to work and participate in the edition, so I designed the cover and kept working. Anyway, this is a long story, but anyway, it had played a big role to give a concept in Morocco in the 60s and early 70s of how culture can play the role of a developing element, like agriculture, like name it, even struggle for independence, struggle for freedom, you know. It's a period, it's a golden period in our history, the 60s.
Sure.
That's very important, because I'm obliged to mention this to give you an idea what was cooking in Morocco in the 60s. Not only mainly paint beautiful paintings, you know.
But I think it's also fair to say and to make everybody conscious that before you come to the Casablanca Art School, such experimentations and such abstract work from the students of the Casablanca Art School was inconceivable. It's really with Mr. Melehis that this radical transformation within the school happened. Also, if you look at another picture here, which is very interesting, and I would like to hear you about this.
Yeah,
this is another view of Mr. Melehi's studio, where in the background we see a carpet, which is a Berber carpet found by Bert Flint, who was Mr. Melehi's colleague at the Casablanca Art School. And you can see that Mr. Melehi's students are actually encouraged to, because these are students' paintings, to experiment over an object such as a rug, you know, a Moroccan popular art and craft rug. And what's very interesting, the first thing you told me when we looked at this picture was that, well, I removed some of the Greek or Roman chest and some of the, classical art
fragments
of body, and I replaced them with a rug, right?
Yeah, because the rug was in the fine art school. When you go to fine art school, they make you reproduce or imitate fragments of statues, you know, problems related to art history and the classicism.
The basis of academia in
the basis. Or objects to draw and paint still lives. So I said, okay, our still life are our jewelry, our tapestry, and our plaster. So I took these pieces.
Yeah, the Greco-Roman sculptures.
I'm not a prophet, but I was inspired by Abraham when he threw away all the statuary and told the people that you cannot worship dead objects. Well,
in a kind of paradoxical...
It's a little bit... so we,
Some of the jewels are... that some of the jewels you're referring to are also photographed by yourself. Sorry.
Yes, because we consider that our problem was really a psychological dilemma. When we went to Europe to learn art, we start asking ourselves, do we have an art? Why our art is not similar like the Italian art or Spanish art? This is the big question. So it's impossible that this society has no meaning, no artistic means. So well, colleagues like Bert Flint, and who's an anthropologist, and we discovered that there is a beauty in the design of objects, in fabrics, in jewelry. So what I've done is I took pictures of these products and blow them up in the studio, and the students used to it was a way to bring them to believe that there is an artistic expression in the Moroccan culture.
Yes.
And mainly, well, Morocco is quite culturally diversified.
So in a way, the return to popular arts, Moroccan popular arts, and Berber arts and craft was a rediscovery, in a way, of what's already modern in something that's not considered modern by a museum, but that you would see as a Moroccan modernity, right?
Yeah, isn't it? It's within the social production. So this was the visual and the pragmatic and materialistic tool to change the situation.
Shall we look at another picture from that intense period of experimentation between the professors, as you were, and the students? This is a mind-blowing view of an exhibition encouraged and methodologically run by the professors, mainly by Mr. Melehi, but then operated and realized with the students of the school. This was happening in 1968 in the Fine Arts Gallery of the Arab League Park in Casablanca. And on this exhibition view, it's a lot of things that you were saying become clear, because the students are not only producing paintings, they're literally covering the space, adding to the space, or in a way recreating a sort of colorful and dynamic environment. And that was, of course, in line with your idea that art should be integrated to different kind of spaces and not only a stable painting on the wall, right? This is, I mean, with objects displayed on these shelves, juxtaposed to these layers of...
It was an exhibition of the end of the year course, and we asked the students to dress this pavilion, you know, and applying the teaching they had received from us, you know, to make an intervention in the space. See, that was the idea.
I also want to look at some early photos of your, not your first solo show, but your main solo show in Morocco after your return from the U.S., So this is in Rabat, 1965, Bab Rouha Gallery. And why do I like this photo? I like this photo because the Moroccan audience, dressed in different fashion, in a more traditional or Muslim fashion, or in a more modern urban fashion, are quite curious. You can feel that they're not only looking, they're trying to understand, which is more than simply looking. Now, on another image of 2 years later, this is you on the left side with three of your students, again in another solo show of yours. And what I find really interesting about it is that this time it's your students, so they know about your work. Yeah. They're not surprised about your work, so they don't have to, you know, dwell so much in the work. They're more interested about what you have to say. But between the curiosity and the interrogation of, you know, the overall or the daily Moroccan visitor to the Bab Rouha Gallery, this is not a place like a museum. This is a place very much open to the street of Rabat, so it's not the same relationship than going to a museum. And this image here, where you can feel the excitement of these students looking at your work, it could have happened in New York, that picture, but it's in Rabat. It's in Casablanca, sorry. So what was the general response, I mean, from the Moroccan audience, you know, between 65, well, 67?
Everything was like new. La nouveauté, I would say.
Nouvelle vague.
Something new. It's something new that it attracts the attention and the vision. So those are some of my students now. When I start my teaching, and you might laugh on this, instead of teaching them how to paint, I said, do you know how to nail a box? I said, no. I brought the hammer and nails, and didn't know how to hammer, to use the hammer. This was one of my first lessons to teach them, help them to learn how to put the nail in a piece of wood. This was this is a bit thin, you know.
I get it.
I don't want you to make a beautiful painting for me. Show me how you nail, how you use the hammer.
I have to ask you something about this now. These are different views of the exposition manifest, which you would translate as manifesto exhibition, présence plastique, yeah. Plastic presence. It was a group of painters from the Casablanca Art School, but Mr. Melehi was quite a leading figure in organizing this outdoor exhibition on Jama Etna Square in Marrakesh, here and there, where we see that Mr. Melehi is using the photography
behind
as a way of
documenting. The camera.
For
Bruce.
And then also another venue of this outdoor exhibition in Casablanca, Place du 18 Novembre, on the right side here. A much more urban, with skyscrapers, that you would find in Casablanca, but you didn't find in Marrakesh. I mean, a lot of people have heard of this sort of very avant-garde outdoor exhibition. For the first time, Moroccan painters will bring their paintings to the streets, to the people, in a gesture also of confrontation to the post-colonial exhibitions that were ongoing in Morocco. And also something very interesting that I would like to hear you about is that you were even interested in just letting the paintings, even with the weather.
Yes, of course. It was very important. Well, the start of this exhibition, it's a protest against the Ministry of Culture. The new Minister of Culture was told that he should organize the salon, or a yearly exhibition gathering all artists. So the group of Casablanca, we decided to go to the meeting with the minister and read our manifest and leave the room. The minister was shocked. He didn't know what happened. It's another earthquake. So they kept going with this exhibition, Le Salon de Printemps, I don't remember, and we decided we quit the Ministry of Culture program, but we do ours. I mean, we don't like the policy of empty chair, what this has been. So we said, we organize an exhibition of a demystification of the work of art. So we went to a very popular square in Marrakesh, and we organized, we were 7 or 9 of us, we hung our paintings in the wall under the sun, the rain, for 10 days, just to show people that art, it's not a precious object, it's an idea, it's a philosophy. So we had a lot of talks in the exhibition, but the simple people, were they had more positive response to us, while the let's say instructed people or educated, they were against us. They said, well, you are just you do things which doesn't mean anything, not especially some left wing people say, oh, so you don't show the misery of the people, you don't, you know. So we are not here to show the misery. We are to produce a type of culture that can help those major people in the misery, but not any of this is very complex. Huh? So this was an exhibition that marks the start of a modern movement of visual arts in Morocco, plus Jamal, very 1968.
We don't have so much time because I'm sure there will be a lot of questions for the audience, but I still would like to take 5 more minutes with you because We have some incredible archives here to share with people. Here we can see a slide showing one of Mr. Melehi's numerous fresco project and wall paintings at a large scale, which was commissioned to him in Paris, in the suburb of Paris, which you can see in the upper picture. And at the same time, you were opening your graphic design studio called Shouf, which means look in Arabic, which was not only a publishing house, but a proper graphic design studio where you could work on your wave pattern outside of paintings in graphic design work, which I find very interesting because we have one specimen of your wave becoming a flame. It's a poster made for Palestine that was published in Souf. And a lesser known one is the one with the Cuban cigar that you made on this wave of yours, because apparently there was an article to be published about the Cuban Revolution in Souffle. And so the wave almost become like this tool that will connect not only the Third World, not only the anti-imperialist struggles, Cuba, Palestine, but also, you know, doing this large-scale fresco in the suburb of Paris. I mean, people maybe don't realize the sort of hectic work production you were engaged in. Can you tell us about this moment when you also accomplished as a graphic designer?
Well, it's very difficult to find the link between these three images. One is really the one of the cigar. Well, I had to smoke a cigar and try to keep the ash on
the
cigar.
Ashes. Right.
To make like a poster. No, the cigar, it used to symbolize our interest on the Cuban Revolution, because it was the inseparable object from Che, from his mouth and Castro.
Right. Instead of showing the Che, you could just show a cigar.
So the article about the Cuban Revolution was illustrated by cigar. There are other pictures. You may find it in Souffle. At the same time, I was commissioned by an engineer to paint a department store, like a department store in Rungis, next to Orly, next to the airport.
Right.
And it was at the same time when the poster of Palestine came out, in Souffle and in Integral.
Yeah. Both.
So those are the paradoxical situation in between. So, your brain can carry different concepts.
Just looking at some other venues where you expand from strict painting to a, you know, much more diverse practice, platforms and travels, is this incredible wave monument that you put up in Mexico in the International Sculpture Symposium 1968 during the Olympics. This work is still erected nowadays in Mexico.
Yes,
you can go visit it.
Yes.
At the same time, there were other international artists creating sculptures in Mexico on this road where all the sculptures were.
They call it the French Road before the Olympic Games. And we were like 17 artists from different parts of the world. I was the only one to represent Africa and the Arab world, and you see this monumental sculpture. It's 11 meters high, and the idea was to give an African dynamic. It's called Cheremusca Africana. Those who know Spanish, Cheremusca in Mexico, they used to produce candy. Can they even perform of a snake or a serpent, because the god of the Mayas is Quetzalcoatl, and they used to give it to the children, you know, to it. So they call it Cheremusca. So I discovered, so I said, well, we'll call it Cheremusca Africana. And the idea to make this metal frame, you see, in two
around
red colors, and done in a very industrial concept. You know, nothing of fine arts, nothing of... The only sensual form is the sculpture.
The wave has its own sensuality,
yes, sensuality,
and then you add this industrial...
And because to symbolize that Africa is the awakening and fighting colonialism. Colonialism is this metal frame.
Like something encircling.
Yes. So the Africa is
expanding from
and emerging. This was the idea. And I was asked by a German artist, Matthias Guritz, who was a refugee in Morocco during the war. And he fled to Mexico, and he was the organizer of this. Now, there were artists from different countries. I'm the only one from the Arab world. And Matthias insisted to organize a meeting like this one and put me in the panel with the Israeli artist Danziger, who was a very nice man. And so, to show to the audience in Mexico that Arabs and Israelis can talk,
you know, to each other.
It's the Israeli problem is very specific to the right wing. So it was very successful talk.
I'd like also to just go for a minute over your relationship to photography. These are very beautiful examples of, you could say, street photography, documents about Marrakech, also about Casablanca, but these are photos from Marrakech. You were documenting those for the journals that you were publishing with your colleagues from the school, the journal called Maghreb Art, but you were also taking photos for yourself, I mean, as a photographer. And I'm just curious to know if photography allowed you to go deeper in your relationship to the city. Is there anything about the city dynamics in Marrakech or Casablanca that you understood through photography? Or photography was just a way of documenting because there was no one documenting?
No, it wasn't a postcard for me. Photography is a tool to speak to people and make people speak.
Right.
That's why I opened the dark room in the Fine Arts School of Casablanca.
Okay.
We give to the students for free cameras and teach them how to develop the negative and so on, and ask them to go everywhere in the streets and bring photos, because it was very difficult to make students express their ideas. You know, Moroccans, we are not very talkative like others. We are not like Egyptians, for instance. I'm sorry for any Egyptian person here. So we had a problem to make the students speak their preoccupations. So through
photography could make them speak, actually.
And how I learned this, when I was attending courses of photography at Columbia University in New York, I had colleagues learning photography from the psychological department. And I was asked, why they are not artists? What they have to do with photography, psychologists? And they explained to me that it helps the psychologist to discover what is the behavior of the person and study the gesture and can show in the picture. So this was the purpose to use photography. Now, I can assure you that Murad is a very fine archaeologist. He found some documents that I forgot. Completely right. Now, I must tell you about this monument. This is the only left Almoravid monument in Morocco. That's in Marrakech. It's a beautiful...
the one on the right side.
And it has been preserved because it was all covered with earth and... garbage, and they forgot. It has been rediscovered after independence.
Right.
You know, it was complete, like the Saadian graves in Marrakech, the beautiful graves. They were when the king Moulay Ismail took power He was contemporary to Louis XIV, Moulay Ismail, the first king of the Alawi dynasty. He destroyed almost everything that the dynasty before him, he destroyed everything. Luxor al-Badir. Anyway, so when he saw the Saadi and Grey, which is very beautiful, you might use the Samar, you know. So he was angry, he could not destroy them, so he covered them with earth. From the 17th century, nobody knew in the middle of the Medina, there is a hill, nobody knew what's inside. So when the French start making archaeology in 1929, they took off the earth and they discovered a marvelous monument. Now, this is a story.
Now, 11th century.
Al-Murabit, yeah. But there are some ideas that Yusuf ibn Tashfin was buried there or not. There is a discussion about this. Now, here, that is a mound, as a fountain. Marrakesh has many fountains.
Here is a fountain.
Each neighborhood has a fountain. And this fountain, of its beauty, this is here where you can really testify that Moroccan people, they have a sense of art and beauty. And they named this fountain Shurub Ushuf. Drink and look. Mm-hmm. You see? It has been a bit destroyed, but I have, through friends, and they found a sponsor from the Habsburg family. Came to visit Marrakesh, and I took her other people to see. So she sponsored to restore. This was before restoration.
Sure.
Shurub Ushuf. This is
drink or look.
Drink and look.
So, Mr. Melehi, thank you so much for all these fascinating and exciting ideas that you share with us. If you agree, I think we need to take a few questions from the audience, because otherwise we won't have the time. And it would be wonderful if we could pull up the screen, so we can also look at your graphic designer achievements on the pink wall, at the same time that we're talking to the audience, and I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of questions.
Aren't you tired?
Shall I? Yeah, sure. I will. Is there another microphone? No? Okay, it's fine. Yeah. I don't need it because... Yeah.
Thank you very much for this generous tour of your life and creativity. It's really marvelous. So while we have learned a lot about your experience as a man from Africa, from the Arab world to the West, I'm very much curious about your experience with the Arab world itself during the 60s and 70s onwards, specifically with the art school in Iraq, the artist school, for example, or the artists from Lebanon, Egypt, because I can see that there are lots of parallels that one can draw between the Casablanca School of Art and the use of heritage, and the Iraqi School of Art, like Shatta Hassan and Saeed, etc., and the use of heritage. So if you could shed some light on that.
Thank you very much. It's very clear what I'm going to tell you. We Moroccan artists really were happy to have a link with the Iraqis in the early 70s, thanks to the first festival of Al-Wasiti in 1971. That was the start of all the Arab movement of art. So the period of in Baghdad is really very important for us to know, because we didn't have any contact with Iraq. We discovered there is a dynamic, you know, in Baghdad, which we could not find in spite of the surrealistic past in Egypt as a golden movement of Arab art in Egypt. All this area between Morocco and Baghdad, it's almost like an emptiness. While both extremes will pretend that the world is contained between Iraq and Morocco. And we have lots of similitudes.
Mr. Melehi actually documented the 1974 Baghdad Biennial and reported about the Baghdad Biennial in Integral in his own publishing and his own photographs. And you have a photo of him in front of Samara here in Baghdad, I mean in Iraq. Thank you for your question, Ahmed.
Thank you.
Another question? Yeah.
Thank you very much for the really nice talk. I think we've finally found the inventor of the Mexican way. So, my question is just generally on this being the first UK solo exhibition. Is it hard for artists from Francophone regions, like North Africa and such, to make a breakthrough in the UK or get recognised? And I mean, like Mosaicum does an amazing job of introducing artists to the UK audience, but is it generally hard because of, I don't know, language or...
Well, I'm sorry because your question is not precise.
I can tell
precise.
You. He's asking how difficult is it for a North African artist to make it internationally, for example, in London.
It's very difficult, you know, because now the situation is changing because the Western world still thinks that art... It's the only world that has art. Other cultures don't have any kind of art. And sometimes they have been considering Islamic art like decorative. What that means, decorative? That means a lower value compared to the classical art. You know, but with the modernity or modernism, we are changing. The concept is changing, so. So a good artist could happen in any place in earth, but the Westerners, mainly the Americans, they cannot understand other cultures can produce a new message or a new concept in modern art. And now there are a lot of black African artists being considered in the Western world, like you have one here, Ibrahim Salahi, who has been living in the UK for 40 years, I think, or more.
Exactly, in Oxford.
And he is considered among the pioneers of black African artists. By the way, Ibrahim came after me to the Rockefeller Foundation. He got the fellow. We exchanged a letter in 1964 before leaving. So the concept is changing.
Thank you. Another question? Yeah.
Thank you. I just want to ask you something related to your time in New York. I wonder what is sort of... just something, if you can say something about any aesthetic relations with the New York School, specific with artists like Mark Rothko, because some of you painted the one behind, I feel like it got kind of aesthetic similarities there, so I just wonder if there is any influence or any aesthetic connections to the New York School of painters.
Well, something shows in my work some familiarity and similarity with the American movement, New York movement, like Ezra Kelly, Barnett Newman, and Rothko, of course, you know, artists that I love the work of Tom Whistleman, for instance. It's between Art Age and
pop
art.
Yeah.
So the New York movement was for me very, very, very important to know, to follow it. And because there is a reason that we didn't have chance to mention the influence of the Bauhaus movement in our work, because through the Bauhaus we discovered that art exists everywhere and everything, and then this discovery of the movement assured us to give more importance and value to the rural art, traditional art, popular art in Morocco. And the New York School is the daughter of the Bauhaus movement through Black Mountain College in North Carolina with Hans Hoffman, where Jackson Pollan was taught, and Motherwell, and maybe Indiana, and all the group of New York. And at that time, the New York movement spread over the world, where the French movement felt themselves in a very weak position. You see, so in the 60s, the Venice Biennale was the thermometer of the artistic temperature in the globe. You see, and the Americas, they used to have a very strong presence, and the French, they were in a weak position, to the point that Malraux, who was the first culture minister in the period of De Gaulle, I know things that he just made use of his influence to signal, to make a signal that he should think of the French movement, because all the prices at the Venice Biennale in the 60s were taken by the Americans, till Marcel Reiss, who was originally an Argentinian from France. Well, those are the underground of politics and art. If you make a research, you might find things like that.
Thank you.
So, well, there is a lot to say about that, but you know, we don't have time.
Of course, another question, yeah?
I'd be interested to know if there are any younger artists that you particularly admire, maybe an American artist or maybe not, but if you could tell us anything about anyone from a younger generation who you admire.
Who he admires?
Or who you like their work, appreciate their work.
He asked if you're interested in younger artist work, either Moroccan or non-Moroccan,
no.
Like younger generation of artists. Are you?
Well, I have contributed to many young Moroccan artists throughout the 70s. And now, by the way, today Morocco has a very interesting movement of art by young artists. Specifically women, which is very unusual in an Arab Muslim country to find young ladies promoted. We were speaking about the situation in Morocco where we had no galleries, no museum. Today there are. So there is an indicator that in Morocco we have like 4 to 5 auction houses. That means there is a national market. You know, this is the situation in Morocco. So there is a modern art museum that has been created 4 or 5 years ago, sponsored by the king himself. And we have a lot of national collections, today. But this is also, don't forget that this is possible in the country where there is a stability, a political stability. name it the way you want, but it's a stability that makes development in every field, in culture, in finance, in the industrial luxury. Morocco is excels of its position in the Arab world, where there is a lot of, you know, mix and unsupportable situation. We hope that we will keep it like this, so the development, you cannot emerge if you don't have stability, and Morocco has it. Thank you.
I think we have time for one or two last questions. A quick one over here.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Of course.
I love the Palestinian one. I notice it's 1969 and that's 1974, very similar in shape.
Yeah.
I don't know what your influence is, but my question is about that. You said
this
the sculpture in Mexico.
Yes.
You said that the frame,
yes,
was to symbolise Africa coming out.
Yes.
Has it come out yet? Has it emerged?
What, Africa?
Yeah, you said it's
Africa.
Out.
Africa is emerging quite well.
That was quick.
Yes.
Well, I give you an example. So, there is a gasoduct being built between Nigeria and Morocco. You could not do that before, and it's been starting. Those are symbols, and today most powers, even big powers, have to count with Africa, which is something in its own.
Thank you.
Maybe one last question?
Last one.
Yeah.
Last one?
Last one.
If you like.
I'd like to ask, what do you see as the role of art in politics?
Sorry?
The role of art in politics. I'd like to ask, what you see is the role of art in politics?
The question is, how do you see the role of art in politics? But it's a very broad question.
No, we love artists who don't deal with politics, but if they can, you know, have a concept about politics, it might save their work. I don't know. Politics, it's like oxygen. You cannot get rid of it. It makes nations. All the whole problem today on the globe is about politics.
That's a very nice. I mean, politics is like oxygen. You can't get rid of it. Okay, one last question for Flora. Okay.
Yeah, my question is about the wave, actually, and about whether you remember the first time that this form struck you and why it's something that you've returned to.
Well,
so
the wave...
That's maybe the most important.
I wrote about it. Wave is force, string of sensuality. Is water, is fire. And if you look to through the traditional African art, there is always a wave. And I took the wave since many years ago as my alphabetic tool. I use it the way I wish to use it. You can see it. And I'm happy with it. But by the way, I concentrated my studies more in sculpture than painting. I consider myself a painter afterwards, painter. But if you notice, my work is very sculptural. That's why I found myself in the hard edge movement, hard contour, and it's also a calligraphy. If you look to that painting, it's like a calligraphy. All of, you know, all converge. They converge, and. Wave makes your mind dance,
yeah.
And your body also
creates movement. Well, please join me in thanking Mr. Melehi so much.
quickly, I forgot to thank the Mosaic Schools of Jeffrey for this opportunity and for my work in London. It's the big workplace. Thank you very much.
Thank you.